racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
We'd like to welcome everyone back into the Grow Room with Bob and Jay. I'm Bob Bupka. My partner is Jay Randolph Jr., probably better known as STL Golf Geek on Twitter. And Jay, before we even go too far, I have to tip my cap to you because very early on, when he was still in college, you said that there was something special about John Rahm. And good golly, were you on the money with that call?
Well, my hesitation, as we've talked about in previous shows, of John Rahm was how much he beat himself up and how it affected him potentially on the golf course. And he's changed that. Not that he wasn't able to win before, but I think this gives him another facet to deal with things and handle situations differently. Bob, this was an extremely impressive performance. I had a sense the previous week when he shot 64 in the final round that the momentum was coming. And he made me a little dough being my leader of my DraftKings team this week. Thank you, Rombo, and very strong win, Bob.
Well, we haven't been able to have any majors this year. But boy, oh boy, the Memorial presented by Nationwide came pretty close. Those greens were hard and fast. Rough was up after 2 weeks not getting cut. I mean, it looked like a major to me.
I think Jack may have sent a memo Monday morning and said enough of this 19-under stuff. And you could hear him in the broadcast. I mean, talking about how he was essentially involved in the setup and all the different things that go into making Muirfield what Jack wants it to be. I mean, I wondered how much can you change a golf course from 1 week to the next? I mean, there's only so many different tees you can use and different angles. But, you know, when you firm it up and you see the greens being firm and you let the rough grow for another week, I mean, and you look at some of the shots that guys had to play on Sunday, Bob, it looked like a major.
Yeah, good point there, Jay. I mean, obviously the biggest change was the speed of the greens, rolling almost a couple of feet faster than they did the week before. And it was intriguing to me, Mr. Randolph, because Jack had been talking about it, that they were going to make numerous changes to the golf course, all new greens, some new fairways, actually, some holes being moved around. And during the telecast on Sunday, I don't know if you saw it, it was just a brief camera shot. They were ripping up one green, you know, and I think Jim Nantz actually had a very great idea. He said to Jack, he said, Jack, you should be selling those strips of sod because people would pay a lot of money for it. And Jack said, well, we didn't have time to organize that, but I thought it was a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly the membership and all involved at Muirfield Village, money is not necessarily an issue. I mean, when you're doing what they seem to do at that property, and like I said, I thought it was fascinating to see how different the same golf course played. I mean, it hadn't happened in back-to-back weeks of playing the same venue since 1957. So that was an interesting part, along with as the week went on, the golf course became more difficult, similar to a major championship.
Yeah, then you throw in the weather they had. It was quite dicey, but nothing dicey for our winner. This is what John Rahm had to say after that victory.
Incredibly proud to sit here and be the Memorial Tournament champion, win an event on the PGA Tour 4 years in a row, number one in the world. There's a lot of accomplishments today that are hard to believe I've done so early in my career. And, you know, first win as a married man, which feels honestly really, really cool. I wish the rest of my family could be here with me, but for obvious reasons they can't. And, well, I just hope everybody stays safe and we can get over this as soon as possible. We can enjoy life and resume it as it was before. But still, man, one of the best performances of my life. Yesterday was probably one of the best rounds of my life. And today, you know, finished it with some clutch up and downs. And God, I'm happy it happened that way. As a Spaniard, I'm kind of happy it happened that way.
Well, you know, one thing, Jay, he may sound very nice. Well, he's even nicer in person. I've gotten to know John Rahm over the last couple of years, and his respect for the game, his idol was certainly Seve Ballesteros. Tough to get a better idol than that. But listen to this. His coach, back when John Rahm was only 13 or 14 years old, his coach says to him, "What are your ambitions in this game, John?" And here's what John had to say.
I said straight up, I want to be the best player in the world. I made that deal with myself very young. I believe at 13 or 14, I started working towards that goal. And everything I've done golf-wise has been to become number one in the world and become the best player I can be. And it's pretty surreal to think it's happened this quickly, right? In less than 10 years. I mean, how many people get to achieve a lifelong dream, a short lifelong dream in their mid-20s? It's incredible to be a Spaniard. The second Spaniard to ever do it. There's not that many Europeans that have gotten to this spot. It's a pretty unique feeling, so I'm going to enjoy it for a while.
He's pretty solid, isn't he, Jay?
I mean, the man said, I said straight up, I want to be number one in the world when I was 13 or 14. You got to love his passion, the fire. It is similar to Seve and Jose Maria and the sense of the way in which they played the game, even though the equipment is all different and all that stuff. He's a very special player. He's done just about everything now. I mean, he's number one in the world. I mean, that's big, real big. All that's left for Rombo, Bob, is a major. And I've always felt like, obviously, with the lineage of the Spaniards down in Augusta, that at some point we're going to see that jacket on John Rahm. I don't know it'll be the first major he wins, but I got to believe he's going to win one of those. And all he's missing now is a major. The man is number one in the world. You straight up did it, John Rahm.
Yeah, and it is a question, I think, of how many majors he wins, not whether he is going to win a major. Certainly a lot of controversy about that chip shot on the 16th hole, the par 3. He drove it into the left rough, deep rough, and then he plays one of the most memorable shots of his career. Had a little Seve touch on it. He knocks it in, but then apparently the ball moved a dimple or two, and only the TV camera zoomed in close enough to see it. And then, obviously, he does get a penalty by two shots. Slugger White, who was head of rules for that week, you know, certainly conversing with other people. But here's what Rahm had to say about that penalty.
When Amanda said I had to talk to Slugger, I was a little confused. I'm like, what do I need a rules official for right now? And when they said something about the ball, still confused. I didn't see that ball move at all. I mean, I just never saw it. So had I seen it, I would have said something or maybe asked for a rules official and explain what happened and would have gone from there. But, I mean, he had to zoom in the iPad so much to see what was a very minimal oscillation that could have basically just been me putting the club down and all the grass just simply going down. It barely moves at all. I mean, everything goes down with it. But the rules of golf are clear, and the ball did move. Unfortunately, he's going to have, you know, a bittersweet feeling to what's possibly one of the greatest shots of my career, the shot that this Sunday gave me the victory. But, you know, that goes to show, you know, I accept the penalty. That goes to show that you have to fight till the end. You know, I could have very easily maybe just give up on the up and down on 17 and 18 and finish with two bogeys. And possibly, you know, after the penalty strokes, give myself a scare and possibly go into a playoff. And still fought hard. You know, every shot counts. I've always took pride and I'm going to fight on every shot. And got those two last up and downs as a true Spaniard would. And And, you know, it is what it is. Then I talked to Slugger. I wasn't really happy about it at first just because he doesn't change the outcome on the tournament. And how many times does it happen in other sports where there's questionable calls of balls being inbounds, not inbounds, touchdowns being touchdowns, not touchdowns. Every other sport is a margin of error. And once the referee makes a decision, they move on. I know I didn't have a referee at this spot, but if it doesn't change the outcome of the tournament, does it really matter? Maybe. Again, I accept what it is. They did move. It doesn't take anything from the day, though. It's still probably one of the greatest days of my life. And, you know, proud that I did what I did, proud that I chipped that in, and proud that I finished the way I did.
Well, before we talk about it, Jay, let's listen to what the rules official, Slugger White, that's who John Rahm referred to. Here's his definition of what transpired.
The rule is 9.4. It was a ball at rest by the player, moved, and since he didn't put it back, he was assessed the general penalty, which is two strokes. That's pretty much the bottom line. When he put the club down behind the ball, it moved ever so slightly to the left, so it would change positions. So he accepted it like a gentleman and the man that he is, and we just went on with it.
Might have been a little bit different scenario if it went from winning by one shot to losing by one shot, but of course we'll never know that. I think John Rahm handled it very well.
I think John Rahm handled it brilliantly, but you're dead on. If this would have been a situation where a playoff would have had to occurred or Rahm would have lost the golf tournament, it's all the golf world would have been talking about. Now, again, you know, we can debate all you want about the involvement of Zooming and this and that. You heard John Rahm, and John Rahm said he didn't see the ball move, and they had to get about as close as you could ever get. I just think we got to continue to be careful. The USGA and the PGA Tour especially has tried to move away from the technology being better than the human eye, and this is a human eye game and always has been. So I think it's a tough situation. I'm glad it played out the way it did because I'm obviously a Rahm guy. And you move on is what you do, because he admitted the ball moved. He took the two penalties, the two shots, and he won the golf tournament.
And it was his 10th career win, fourth win on the PGA Tour, first win as a married man. I also found one other aspect of the final results, Jay, kind of interesting. Last year, two guys played together down in New Orleans in the team event. It was John Rahm and Ryan Palmer, and they came out on top with a victory. Here, John Rahm comes out on top. Ryan Palmer comes in second. Seems incredible that something like that could happen.
It is a little wild. There's no doubt about it. And Ryan, you know, did not play well at all the previous week. He went home, got a lesson, little swing change, and comes out and plays really well. And he was headed south in a big way on Sunday off the bat, and it kind of changed the whole pace of the golf tournament. And he fought hard. So he, you know, kudos to him for finishing second. Then you look at Matthew Fitzpatrick. You know, the second consecutive week he had Bones McKay on the bag, and he has one of his best finishes ever in the United States. Now, he was quick to point out this is not a permanent thing, and Bones, I think, is enjoying the gig at NBC, but, Fitzpatrick's got to think, wow, what a caddy he is. But good for him. And another young Matt Wallace from England, tied for fourth.
Well, Bones had a decision to make after the successful run with Fitzpatrick. So what he did, he laid down a pros golf bag, and alongside of it, he laid down a microphone. Then he reached over, and he tried picking up the bag, and then he tried picking up the microphone. He said, well, seems like it's a little easier with this microphone, and I get guaranteed money. This mic doesn't have to make the cut for me to get paid. So Bones will be back on NBC. Now, Tiger, kind of an up-and-down tournament for Tiger. Before we talk about him, let's listen to what he had to say after his final round.
Competed and played again. It's been a while, and it was nice to get my feet wet and compete and play again. And tough conditions to start out my first week back, Thursday and Sunday. But it was good to get the feel and the flow of competing. Well, I think I need to work on my putting a bit and clean that up. But as far as my swing, it felt good. You know, I was able to hit good shots. Friday was a bit off, you know, physically, but overall for our first week back, it was a lot of positives.
What did the trained eye of Jay Randolph Jr. see in Tiger's performance?
A mixed bag, as you said. You know, there were stretches and times where he looked fantastic, like he did over in Asia back last fall. And then there were times he looked like he couldn't control the driver or control the position off the ball. You know what? I wonder if Tiger got done on Sunday and said, you know what? I mean, I know it's Jack's tournament, and I know it's Memorial, but maybe I'd have been better off playing last week when it wasn't quite so tough. I mean, he fought. I mean, that golf course will beat you up. And, you know, the key is to turn your doubles into bogeys more than anything, because you see so many double bogeys there. I mean, I think like he said, he was back. Now, he hasn't yet said whether or not he's going to play in Memphis next week. If he doesn't, then we're looking at the PGA Championship out in San Francisco. So, you know, I mean, anything now that he does is going to be big, and people are going to pay attention. And whether it's so-so, you don't know from week to week. I mean, if it's the right week, watch out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Memphis, I don't know. I mean, could be 100 degrees, 100% humidity.
Yep.
And, you know, the major is coming up the following week. It's going to be completely different weather-wise.
Yep.
San Francisco with the cool temperatures, a lot of fog. Who knows what's going to happen? So we'll wait and see on that.
Bob, that's a great point. I mean, and it'll be interesting. I have not yet seen the field for Memphis, and we both love that event. I mean, it's a super event. The fact that it's gotten the status that it's gotten now with the FedEx, and this was going to be a big year for them, but it changes because of how they reworked the schedule and being the week before a major. But you're right. I mean, if you've really been pointing toward the PGA, do you want to play in 100 degrees and feel like 105 in Memphis on a totally different type of design and totally different conditions? You know, it was Mark Twain that said his coldest winter was the summer in San Francisco.
Well, pretty good line there, my friend. Was that Mark Twain or Jay Randolph Jr.?
That was Mark Twain.
Oh, well. That's
but
all right.
I can use it now. A lot of people don't know Twain.
Yeah, that's for sure. Anyway, there was a couple of extra things given out. Ryan Palmer, by finishing second, he gets a place in the U.S. Open. Nice little perk. Mackenzie Hughes, who finished tied for sixth, he gets a place in the U.S. Open. So both those guys, you know, congratulations. See you at Wingfoot. What about the news that Jack let it be known that he and Barbara had experienced COVID-19?
I mean, you know, when he said it just hit you. I mean, because he's been in front of us for so long. And most of us have, you know, some relation or somebody that we know or something. But when Jack says Barbara and I had it, it's like, damn. You know, and he talked about the amount of time that he stayed at home, or AKA quarantine. That was a little shocker. And, you know, in a lot of ways, as you know, Bob, Jack is tries to be private. I mean, as best as he can for the family. And, you know, I'm kind of glad that maybe you didn't have to hear in the first couple of weeks, this thing, Jack Nicklaus has COVID. And, you know, I mean, Jack don't need all that static.
You have to plug in the fact that he's you know, they're both 80 years old, so more serious. And it made me flash back a little bit, Jay, that maybe the confidence I had was not well-founded. Let's put it this way. We go back a huge number of years. We were at Salem, Massachusetts. It's the Senior Open. It's a Saturday afternoon. I mean, it is getting dark outside. Everybody's saying, when are they going to blow the siren? You know, this storm's coming here any minute. And then I said, where's Jack? Oh, he's playing 18 right now. I said, well, just hold on, all right? So Jack hits his shot onto the green, takes his putt, misses that, then had a three-footer. And trust me when I tell you this part, Mr. Randolph, that ball got 1/4 inch on its way down to the hole, meh, went to siren, and they go in. Now, there was just a little tent. There couldn't have been 5 or 6 media people in there, and the storm is raging, and everybody left, and now it's just Jack and I sitting there, and along with Janice Self, the executive producer, and it's dark. The lights go out, and all of a sudden, Jack says, who's holding my hand? I said, it's me, Jack. I said, God would never hit you by lightning. So maybe I had confidence when I shouldn't have had confidence. But happy to hear that Jack and Barbara are doing well. As great. And nobody thinks there's ever been anybody any greater than Jack on the golf course. Barbara has been all of that. As a wife and a mother and a lady in that position, she set the bar so high that I don't think anybody will ever achieve that. All right. A lot of tests for the players. Pretty good results so far, Jay.
Yeah, it is really good when you look at the numbers. About 6,000 players. Between the PGA Tour and the Nationwide, the Corn Ferry Tour, have been given, and they've had 10 positive results. Grayson Murray became the 10th over the weekend, so I think that's a better percentage than most places around the country. But I don't know. That's just what I believe, or at least it seems. So that's good. And I think the players now understand when they're on the road that they're basically quarantined. I mean, when they're on the road, these guys are not going out to the local Outback Steakhouse or Ruth's Chris for dinner. I think that a lot of them have gotten, you know, we talked about Justin Thomas and Fowler and a couple other guys that have got a chef or a cook traveling with them. So, and they're staying in housing, many of them. So I think they're doing everything they can, and they seem to be ahead of the curve.
Well, Jay, for you and I, it'd be a cook. For those guys, it would be a chef. All right, let's move on to the 3M Open in Blaine, Minnesota. A couple of good groups. I mean, Dustin Johnson, Tony Finau, Tommy Fleetwood all playing together. I think there's going to be a lot of interest in that. How about Matthew Wolf, Max Homa, Brandon Grace also are going to be competing together. You know, Minnesota loves its golf. We have found that out over the years. Great state, great people. We're hoping for a great event.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is probably the event that's in the toughest spot if you look at the way that the schedule was reworked. It's nice to see DJ playing. Matthew Wolf is the defending champion. He's got a nice young fan base that he's building. And Koepka is also in the field as he continues to try and find something. You know, we talked about it, Bob, when he had the slip on the path over in the Far East. And he came back real quick. I mean, so I've wondered about this, and it's been tough on him. He still hit some decent shots last week. But right now, you know, the other thing you got to think about is the FedEx Cup standings. Because there's only a couple events left before this thing is real and you start moving on. So I think, you know, while I'll be honest with you, this event is probably the least interested I've been in of an event. I think it's going to be a very interesting golf tournament. This seems like a week where a name that you're not thinking about or somebody could pop up and have a big week. You don't know much about the TPC Twin Cities. They haven't been up there that long in terms of the tournament. So, by Thursday or Friday, I'll probably be ready to rock and roll with it.
Yeah, we wish the 3M people and that event the best of luck. The season, with that long delay, is rapidly moving on. It seems like every day seems like another week on tour has gone by. We're on a collision course, obviously, with the PGA Championship in San Francisco. Then we got the U.S. Open. We got a Masters. I mean, good golly, we're going to have a lot of high-level golf, and it's all going to come rather rapidly.
Let's hear a little bit about Gateway National, where I call home in Madison, Illinois. Golf is up around the country, and if you're ever in the greater St. Louis area, here's why you should come to Gateway. Enjoy golf as it was meant to be played at Gateway National Golf Links, a stunning link-style course in the St. Louis area. After all, it is the number one public golf course in St. Louis, and it's the only one with bent grass fairways. Only public course in the region with bent grass fairways. Gateway National offers golfers the rare opportunity to return to the rich traditions of the game with rolling links in the heart of the country. Gentle mounds and plenty of tall grasses. Spacious fairways, and of course, when you play number three, well, you just aim for the Gateway Arch. That's right, the iconic St. Louis Arch is right there. Gateway National Golf Links, the number one public golf course in St. Louis and the only one with bent grass, with a friendly staff to make your day a memorable one, to make your tee time the best way and the best rates, are online at gatewaynational.com. An added perk, if you live here in the St. Louis area, you purchase the season pass. Walters Golf Management manages 8 other properties, and you'll get playing privileges at those golf courses. Gateway National, always in great shape. And remember that website, gatewaynational.com. That's where you'll find the best rates, gatewaynational.com.
No doubt about it, one of the finest golf courses in the St. Louis area, Gateway National.
Well, he's ready to roar once again. Bob is going to be joined by Alex Maselli, who's going to give us an update on what's happening on the European Tour. They're playing. When I actually see a logo of them playing, it freaks me out. But we'll find out about that and his take on Jon Rahm and the ruling for his shot on the 16th hole in the final round of the Memorial. Here's Bob and Alex.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Joining us now, Alex Maselli, founder of Morning Read. And Alex, I know you just got off the phone a few minutes ago with Lee Westwood, who is really stepping up to the plate to generate some action on the European Tour. Can you bring us up to speed? What's going on with Lee Westwood and the European Tour?
Well, Bob, in this world now, you get to do press conferences by Zoom or Microsoft Teams or whatever electronic system they have in place, and European Tour is using, just like the PGA Tour is using, Teams. And so I got to sit in on the press conference of Lee Westwood today in northeast England in regards to his event this week, which is the British Masters. British Masters. I don't know who the sponsor is actually. And Lee, in this discussion, who has, first of all, lost a lot of weight and gotten a lot of strength. He's been on his Peloton for like over 2 months. He's been playing golf. He's been working out, doing all the things that some of us should be doing when we're in this pandemic. Has said that he's not going to play in the PGA Championship, even though he's exempt to get into it. And he's not playing, obviously, next week in the World Golf Championship in Nashville. And would probably be reluctant to play in the U.S. Open as well. And a lot of that comes down to the fact that our country is still in the midst of a very deep pandemic, and we don't seem to be going in the right direction. We seem in some ways to be going in the wrong direction. And Lee is close to 50. He's asthmatic and doesn't really like the idea of getting on a plane and flying 8, 9, 10, 12 hours. And so, obviously, golf's majors mean not as much to him now as they did when he was younger because of the situation we're in.
And, of course, probably taking a realistic look, he's saying to himself, you know, probably not going to have a legitimate chance at winning. Obviously, lightning can strike, you know, anywhere. Do you think Lee Westwood's dedication to working out and stuff has anything to do with Bryson DeChambeau?
No, it doesn't, because he'd been doing that way before anybody knew much about what was going on with Bryson. And even if he had been intending to work out because of Bryson, it doesn't change the fact that Lee Westwood at his age is never going to be able to get close to what Bryson was doing. So that's not the goal. I think the goal, like most people as they get older, I saw a picture of Colin Montgomery, who's lost a lot of weight and working out over this time. I think you realize that sometimes you just need to do something to get yourself better in better shape, and understanding that in being in better shape and being, which will make you healthier, which in turn will, to some extent, protect you against some of the things that are going on out there in the world, which in this particular case means the COVID-19 virus. And so I think that's all that's a positive. Unfortunately, we're not anywhere close to getting this figured out. And if you're a professional athlete and you live in the UK, I think you're going to be restricted in regards to what you would do coming over here. I mean, let's be honest, at 3M this week, Tommy Fleetwood is there, but he probably came in and had to spend 14 days on a before he could go ahead quarantine himself before he could play. So he'll play 3M. He'll play the World Golf Championship with his exempt in. He'll play the PGA Championship. So he's decided to take that route where other players have decided not to.
All right. A little clarity on Lee Westwood in the European Tour. He's the force behind, as I understand it, six events. Am I right?
Well, he's going to play in three. He is, you know, obviously being the sponsor of one of the events, it means he's obviously supporting the European Tour to the extent that he can. He did say that he thought that the process that the tour has in place was very, very positive. And it also spoke well of what the PGA Tour was doing as well. I mean, when you look at the PGA Tour, they've been kind of like the gold standard, at least for right now. When you look at, they've only had, you know, less than 10 positive tests for players on the PGA Tour, not the Korn Ferry and not the caddies, but less than 10 positive tests. And they've tested, you know, I don't know, 2,000 or 3,000 players or test 2,000 or 3,000 times. So that's a pretty good number compared to the numbers you see in the general population.
All right, let's switch gears and go to Muirfield. We now have a new world number one. You know that, John Rahm. There was an incident involving a rules infraction. Your 60-second take on how it was handled and just the whole thing about, you know, the ball moving and Rahm not being told. And I want Alex Maselli's take.
Well, I think, first of all, the fact that the ball moved, I still maintain, and there's others that maintain it as well, so I'm not in – I may be in the minority, but I'm not the only one – that you can't tell for sure that the ball moved. When I say moved, I mean moving out of its position. It doesn't mean oscillated. It doesn't – and then returned to its position. It means it rolled out of its position. You can't tell me you know that for sure. Secondly, the fact that the PGA Tour is supposedly – through other rules questions, rules issues, supposedly has someone watching television and fighting these things and supposedly is going to react very quickly when these issues happen so that they can notify the player if necessary or whatever needs to happen. From the time it happened at the 16th, the second shot on 16, which is a par three, they weren't really prepared to say anything to John Rahm until he was off the tee on the 18th hole. So that means there was a whole hole, a little more than a hole, before they were prepared to say anything to him. Now, you know, if John Rahm didn't have a 5-shot lead and had a 1-shot lead or a 2-shot lead, at what point would the PGA Tour decided that maybe they needed to step in during the round versus waiting until after the round? I mean, I don't think you should be, that should not be something that you would be questioning depending on the situation. That'd be something you should just say, no matter what the lead is, no matter what the situation is, when we see it, we need to endeavor to tell that player by X. And it's not just that player. In this particular case, it would need to be the other players around him, meaning Ryan Palmer or someone else, because those players as well have, you know, an interest in what happens with that particular situation as well. So I think those two things are a problem. And I think thirdly, it's clear that the USGA needs to look at this rule again. I hate to see the USGA looking at rules again, but what's the difference between if a ball moves on the green and a ball moves in the rough? I don't really understand that. The ball moves, the ball moves. And I think they should all be treated the same, and they shouldn't, and they are not being treated the same in this scenario.
Well, you brought up the USGA. Before I let you go, Jack Nicklaus, while on CBS television, made his sternest comments that I've heard him say about the USGA by saying, you know, you've been studying this distance issue for 20 years. It's really time for you to do something. What did you think of Jack's comments?
Well, I mean, I think Jack's right. If he's been saying something for 20 years, they have done nothing, really, nothing to change this issue. And studying it takes you so far. I mean, I think everybody can agree that when Jack and others started saying that the ball is going too far from there to where we are today, the ball is going extremely much further than any of them would have anticipated. Now, I'm not a I don't have a problem with distance necessarily, but in particular, if you're Jack, you do have a problem. And I think studying it is, we're way past the study point. I mean, either you do something or you don't do something. And if you're not going to do anything, then quit talking about it. Meaning, you know, Martin Slumbers from the RNA, who just talked about it recently, you know, the USGA coming out with this this whole report. I mean, I have to be honest with you, Bob. They came out with a report that says there's an issue. But now they're shelving the report until the coronavirus and COVID is dealt with. I don't know why they have to wait. I mean, if you have an issue and you think there should be things addressed, you can still put those together. You can still put them out there. Titleist is still making equipment and balls. Callaway is still making equipment and balls. TaylorMade is still making equipment and balls. They're not stopping. So why would we stop dealing with an issue if it needs to be addressed?
Well said, as usual. We thank you for your time. And as always, you and your family stay safe.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGRGolf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.